Okay, same old, medical advisory committee stuff. Spanky took one thing off. I don't have to talk about the UT Southwestern thing because Spanky did that. I'm just going to elaborate on that real quick. I was at the meeting in April when we discussed that with the doctors, and I went to bat for us because the Dr. Sabor, whatever her name is, I thought they wanted too much information, and I said, and then Jamie was telling, what Spanky was talking about, how Jamie, they initially wanted us to, they were going to mandate that we do it as athletic trainers, and just for the record, I threw a fit about that in the middle of the meeting. I thought, you can't make us do that. So it's a volunteer thing. It's not mandatory. Okay, here's the members. Most of y'all have seen some of this. Some of y'all are maybe first-time listeners to me. Maybe some of these doctors you work with, but they're all good people. And then, as you know, last year we had to add athletic trainers to the medical advisory committee and another physician, and that was due to a sunset review of the UIL. And Spanky's friend, Senator Ford Price, that he refers to a lot, that had a lot to do with the concussion bill and stuff, he was the oversight member of the sunset review for the UIL. And they wanted us to add a doctor, another physician, and two athletic trainers, and then the two coaches association representatives, D.W. Rutledge and Sam Tipton, from their respective coaches associations. They used to have voting privileges, and in case you don't know this, they did no longer have voting privileges on the UIL Medical Advisory Committee, so we don't have coaches making medical decisions for us anymore. And, okay, so they have input, but they do not have voting rights anymore. But they did at one time. And then, I like the little room better than this big room. Valerie Duran, she's been at Midland High. She worked in Fairbanks, Alaska for a couple of years. She's been at Plainview. Now she's at North Crowley. And she's a good friend of mine. I put her on the committee. Actually, I put her and Buzz on the committee. I got to handpick the trainers for the committee. The UIL didn't do it. They let me pick them. And, but she's my shoulder expert. And when we talk about, how many of y'all have heard about the new pitch count thing coming down the pipes? I'm gonna elaborate on that when I get to that slide in a little bit. But anyway, I put Valerie in charge of that, and she's done a fantastic job on that. And then that guy at the bottom, we just talked about him. He's the rep from the TSATA. And he comes to our meeting. He wasn't at the last meeting, but he comes to most of them. Okay, subcommittees. Dr. Fenrick, he's the pediatric cardiologist at the top. He's the one who makes the cardiac awareness form on the physical packet. Any changes, which we're going to talk about in just a minute, because that form changed this year, in case you didn't know it. And I'm going to talk about the changes and what to do and what you don't have to worry about and all that here in a second. But anyway, he's the one who does that. Dr. Seals, he's a pediatric neurologist at San Antonio that's on the head committee. Heat committee, me, I'm in charge of that. And then history is Dr. Hergengroder, who's a sports medicine guy out of Houston, and he's like one of the most intelligent people I've ever been around in my life. He is something else. And we don't have breakout meetings at our committee. When we meet as a UIL committee, we don't have breakout meetings and this and that, but when we have issues, the members of each subcommittee, we coordinate with each other over email and telephone and then bring back our status and our report to the meeting. And this is a little bit of history of what we think some of the things we've accomplished over the years. And I know it's hard to fit on one page, and you can look at that. And, you know, the biggest thing that we've had to deal with over all these years, and I've been on this committee 16 years, I think, is the concussion thing has been our biggest nightmare we've had to deal with. I mean, we started out back in the old days, and we had the concussion management protocol. Remember when the UIL sent everybody, got a little card to carry in your pocket and all that kind of stuff, and then Natasha's Law came up a couple of years ago, and then we had to incorporate our concussion protocols to accommodate the law. And anyway, that's the biggest mess we've had to deal with. Okay, this slide, you know, I like to show this slide every year, and I change the picture. But every year, year in and year out, I get telephone calls. Okay, I've got a softball girl. She's 6 months pregnant. We don't want her pitching, but her doctor says she can pitch. What do? You let her pitch. I mean, the UIL will not tell them yes they can or no they can't. It's going to be between the parent and the doctor and y'all. And hopefully sometimes smarter minds will prevail. But there's an old fellow named Will Rogers. How many of y'all know who Will Rogers is? Heard of him? Well, he's got one of my favorite sayings is the one thing about common sense is it ain't so common. And there you go. And then I got a little thing to go with that. And then if you really think you're pregnant, wait until tomorrow to tell your mother. Okay, steroid testing. We all know what it was, and it's still here, but it's not here. How many of y'all know that? Okay, anyway, at the bottom is the stuff in the red is what it is now. We had zero positive tests because we did zero tests. We saved $1.6 million. And the thing about it is you still have to have them sign the steroid testing form in your on the physical packet because it's still in the books, but there's no money to fund it. So, I mean, it's politics, y'all. You still got to do the form, but they don't come to test, and that's like the greatest thing that ever happened to me is not have to show up and go round up kids and look at their piss all day in a glass, you know. Okay, the pre-participation physicals. How many of y'all know that there was last-minute changes on that just within the last couple of months? Okay, well, we knew that it was probably going to come, and I kept fussing with the UIL about getting this done, and Bubba over here was giving me shit about it a little while ago, and I'm just going to say it. And I said, we knew it was going to come, but as the committee, we recommend changes, and our goal is to recommend them in October to have it done and completed by the end of January. So those of you people who are like way ahead of the ball game that print your forms like in February, you know, you're go-getters. I don't do my forms until April, but we try to have it ready for y'all to print by then. But anyway, they wanted to make some changes and some things came down. And then Dr. Fenrick, who's on the heart guy, he was having some issues about how he was going to change that. But anyway, if you look at your forms, on number 4, they just added that one little question. How severe was each one? If you look at that. And then at the bottom, right above where you sign that everything you said was you state is true, and if you lie, you suffer penalty of the UIL, which I don't think they've ever issued a penalty for someone lying on their form, because there's probably 40% of those physical forms y'all get are signed by the children anyway and not their parents. Y'all agree with me on that? They show up at the mass physical and, oh, mama was not here, and they just start signing crap. We all know it. And is it legal? No, but unless something ever happens, you're not going to get, nothing's going to happen. We all know that. We've all been through that. But anyway, am I lying or not? No. Anyway, at that bottom part, that part in the red right there was added, and I don't know why it was added, but they did it in the office. It wasn't done by our committee. The medical advisory committee didn't do that. The UIL staff did that change. Time out. But anyway, I called him on this, and Mike Carroll, I don't know how many of y'all know Mike Carroll. You know, he knows everything. I'm just kidding, Mike, if you heard me. I don't care if you heard me say it or not. But my phone started ringing off the wall. Well, all these people printed their forms, and I'm getting phone calls and emails, and I'm like, I don't know why you're getting them. You didn't do it. But I talked to the UIL the day that this crap storm hit everybody started finding out about this. And we had a discussion, Jamie Harrison and I and the athletic director at the UIL and Mark Cousins, and then a little bit of discussion with Dr. Brodup that, hey guys, this is late. Some of these people have printed their forms, and granted, printing up 500 forms isn't a whole lot of money, but it's still a matter of getting it done. And we keep adding paperwork, so the paper, you know, it's still, you know, it's almost getting to be like an NFL physical now instead of a high school physical with all the paperwork we're doing. And anyway, we had that discussion, and we agreed that if you already had printed your forms and you were already handing them out, that they were going to be good for the 16-17 school year, and the next time you go to print, you print the new form. So if you have the old form or the new form this year, you're good either way. I like to talk about this one every year too, because especially down here in the Valley, El Paso, OJ, y'all know where OJ is? Ojinaga, Presidio area down in there by Big Bend. Everybody says that if you're going to take a physical for a student in Texas, it must be a licensed healthcare provider from the United States. Not from Matamoros, or Acuna or OJ or Juarez, because if there was any kind of litigation, their license in Mexico is not worth the paper it's written on over here, and you've got no leg to stand on, so don't take one. Or, and like, how many of y'all have had foreign exchange students? Yes, we've all had a bunch of those. And they come with the physical from over there. I don't take those. They need to have a physical from a licensed healthcare provider in Texas, even if it's a chiropractor, okay? Safety training, again, we always got to talk about this. And referring back to what Spanky was talking about earlier about the Dallas Morning News thing, trying to stir up another crap storm about the COT and all that. And in case y'all know it or not know it, all your coaches' compliance information, like have they been certified in CPR, AED, first aid? Have they done their concussion training? Have they done their rules compliance program through the UIL? First-year coaches have to have the first-year class from the National Federation of High School Coaching, the Fundamentals of Coaching course. And when you sign on with the school district, you have to sign the professional acknowledgement form. All that is public record. That's not protected by privacy laws. And if you have a parent who has a kid who's been injured, has a concussion, or your local newspaper like the Dallas Morning News, San Antonio Express News, or whoever, they want to come and do an open records request and want to know, see every coach's compliance record, your school district has to be able to provide that to them. I think the legal time is 10 days or 2 weeks, something like that. But that needs to be on record. Like, and your doctors that are on your concussion oversight team, they are also required to have concussion training. And that has to be on file. And I would be willing to bet you the money in my pocket, which is more than I got a couple of $100 in my pocket probably right now, that 80% of your doctors on your concussion oversight teams are out of compliance on their concussion training. I'll bet you $100 if you go look at that. And that's something that I don't know if your school district puts you in charge of, but ultimately that responsibility falls on the superintendent of schools. And that also, that ranks right up here with the compliance with Senate Bill 82, unless you are, and a lot of us are, that, you know, that unawful word that you get, the designee, the boss's designee, which a lot of us are head football coach's designee or whatever. The superintendent's ultimately in charge of that. And the other problem we have with complying with Senate Bill 82 is that there are hundreds of superintendents that don't even know what that is. I mean, literally, you get down to little schools, they don't know what it is. And I would almost bet you that my superintendent, who he has this t-shirt that says, I don't need an encyclopedia because I know everything, one of those kind of guys, he doesn't know anything about this. And then we had an old athletic director about 4 years ago, and I'm from a 6A large school district, he didn't know what that was. And so staying in compliance with Senate Bill 82 has got to be a real problem, and the only time it's ever going to become a problem is when there is a problem and some lawyer finds out that there's a Senate Bill 82 and you as a school district weren't in compliance with it as far as doing the safety training. You know, all the kids have to do the PowerPoint. They have to sign a piece of paper. You have to turn in they're supposed to turn in a roster and a signature page to prove that they did that, and it's supposed to be on file somewhere. And again, if mom and dad comes in and says, my kid, say, suffered a heat exhaustion episode or something like that, and they found out about this and they want to know if had taken that course. Well, somewhere right on there it says, let's see if it's the next page. Yeah, right here at the top. Here's what happens. So you have football. Football starts 1st of August. Well, they don't get the kids until the first day of practice. I mean, we all know that they all cheat and they all do stuff before they show up to practice. I mean, we all know they meet. We all know about that. Anyway, the strange thing about this is I've been trying to get it changed and make the safety training PowerPoint a requirement to be done before the first day of practice. But in theory and in accordance to the rules in the book, you could play football all season, and then after spring training, the week before school's out and the week before finals, you could get them all in and put them in the weight room and show them the PowerPoint presentation and do it 8 months after football's over. And you could do that with any sport. There's no time frame written in the CC&R about when that's to be done, and I've been working hard to get that changed. And right now it's just like we've got it as a local rule in our school district that you have to do it before the the season starts, but UIL doesn't have that written down. And why? Can't know. Okay, remember, this came in a couple years ago, 90-minute total contact for football. And as we all know, no one has 90 minutes of contact during a week of football practice, I don't think. If they do, you're having one hell of a football practice. But, you know, because there's a lot of standing around. And, you know, we made that change about what counts and what doesn't. And that's still in effect. We didn't change that back. But, again, you know, we make rules, and rules are meant to be what? Broken. It happens all the time. That's why we make rules, because people break the rules and we have to amend them, because we had a coach in South Texas. I'm not going to tell you what town it was, but they like practiced for 6 hours with no water breaks and no and all that, and you get reports on that, and that's why we change things. Anyway, this is, you know, remember the rules. You can have 3 hours of practice. Got to be a minimal two-hour break between a practice if you're having two-a-days. Can't be more than 5 hours in a day. And now, water breaks count as practice time, whereas before you could theoretically have 5 hours of practice time scheduled in a day, 2 hours in between, but you could have scheduled 8 10-minute water breaks during that 5 hours of practice and add 80 minutes to the time they're exposed to the heat and the sun outside. And that's why that was changed, just in case you didn't know that. And then these are, again, showing you the different kinds of, that's Arkansas, Oklahoma, us, NATA, NCAA, what they recommend as far as that goes. I'm not going to elaborate on that too much. Okay, you know, Spanky was talking about the UT concussion injury reporting thing, and that's just for concussions. There's still discussion at the UIL to come up with a new system to report injuries. And as I'm sure a lot of y'all know, if your school is the district chair during football, you're required to submit a weekly injury report to the UIL, correct? And then if you get in the playoffs, you got some more week. Well, they're trying to work on something that's smarter and easier. And I'm preaching about it being user-friendly because Spanky elaborated a while ago. He said it takes about 8 to 10 minutes to do that concussion thing. Well, 8 to 10 minutes sometime during the middle of a football season, that's a lot of dadgum time to put in something that, you know, I got into an argument with those people about all the information they wanted, and one of them was one of the big ones I got onto, and y'all may think I'm crazy for this. This is just my opinion, and y'all know I don't have a problem giving my opinion, is that I don't care what ethnicity you are. Your brain inside your head's the same whether you're an Asian, a Pacific. I don't care where you came from and what you are. I just want to know how many there was and how long it took to recover and get back to return to play, and that's all I care about, and your age. But anyway, I go through and look and compare year to year to year and changed it, and pretty much the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the incidences of injuries to body parts pretty much has remained the same year in and year out. And I went through 8 years of data that I have from all the years I've been doing this and looked at that. It hardly changes, y'all. And this is just football. I've been trying to get them to add soccer because I think adding soccer to this, and I know it's a little extra work, to have some more data on a different sport would be good, but they don't listen to me. Here's the percentages of injuries that occurred in game that went to hospital. And if you notice, they're relatively the same except for the ones that required a hospital visit. And surgeries went down this year. And that doesn't mean they actually went down, y'all. I'm just telling you, that's what was reported to us by the injury reporting system. This data is not 100% reliable. It's more informative. Okay, and from the classes of schools that reported 1A through 6A, those are the number of schools that reported the injuries that we had. And here is, for the last 5 years, 6 years, more concussions were reported this year than by increase of 3% than, or 4%, whatever it is, yeah, than before. And I really don't think there's been more concussions than there ever was, but the more being reported because of the law and the way that we handle them now. And, you know, we're more conservative and, I don't know about y'all. I'd like to visit with y'all sometime, but I've had more concussions at the junior highs than I have had at the high schools. And they take like three times longer to heal than the high school kids. Okay, cheerleaders. You know, Spanky talked about that a minute ago too. But you know, that cheerleading competition thing started this year. And it's, I don't know how many of y'all had to deal with it or not, but it was not an issue. It's not going to be an issue. But they still have to do the concussion training and all that like everybody else does. Okay, the cardiac awareness form. We added some, Dr. Fenrick added some language, and I think y'all are going to hate this, but it still could be subject to change in the next 6 weeks because some of the literature that he's looking at. But again, if you've already done your forms and it's already signed, you just go with what you got, and next year you print out the new form. You don't have to worry about it. That's my take-home message on the form thing because, you know, 1 year we changed the forms in the middle of July, and they had to put me in an armored car because everybody thought it was my fault and I was going to get killed. I mean, there are people, I needed chicken wire in front of the stage. It was terrible. And I didn't have anything to do with it. But anyway, let me look. Nope, let me go back. At Medical Advisory Committee meeting in April, a man came. And he's with the Cypress ECG Project, and I know y'all are familiar with him. They go to a lot of schools and do ECGs for $15 or EKGs for $15 or whatever. And this topic is going to continue to be the hottest thing going. When legislature starts up in January, this fall, there's going to be more legislation introduced to mandate that we do this. And the push is getting a little stronger every year. That little train hadn't made it up the hill yet, but they're adding more push cars on the back of it. And one of these days, I foresee it happening, but I don't know. But anyway, what he wanted to do was, he wanted to add a question. He proposed to add a question to number 4 at the bottom that if you answered yes to any of these questions, it was mandatory that you go see a doctor and have an ECG or an EKG or an echo or whatever they required. And we turned him down and refused his proposal again because the doctor or the person performing that physical exam has the authority to require that if they think it needs to be done. And we didn't want to put anything else in writing. So you won't see that question on the form. Okay, here's the new topic, baseball pitching restrictions. This is what we have right now. It's by innings, okay? Well, last year, the UIL charged the Medical Advisory Committee to research pitching regulations throughout the country, and they wanted us, basically requiring us, to change from innings to pitch count. Well, that new person that we put on the committee last year, Valerie, she's like an expert in the shoulder. She did a lot of work at Ben Hogan when she was right out of college. She went to UTA. And I charged her with coming up with a plan, and then I was collaborating with her, and Dr. Tanamachi from Mesquite was the other person on this committee that we did that, and we also collaborated with Rex Sanders, who's the head of the Texas High School Baseball Coaches Association. He's their executive director. And the Baseball Coaches Association invited Valerie and I to come to their annual meeting in January and have a panel discussion about pitch counts and do all this. Well, I had already had a previous commitment. I did not go, but Valerie went and represented us with the Baseball Coaches Association because they wanted our opinions. And she started coming up with a plan. Well, it's about a 3-page thing. I didn't put it all on here. But what I did was, this is what we're looking at right now. And the Coaches Association people that were there, they agreed with this. They're not happy, but they agreed with it for the time being. And the hardest part about doing this pitch count thing is going to be how to monitor it, how to report it if you violate the rule, and that we have a form made that the coaches have to fill out after every game and innings pitched and number of pitches they pitch. But I didn't put all that on here yet because it's not a rule yet. It is this year, it is a recommendation that they may do this. We thought Tuesday was Legislative Council meeting in Austin. And if y'all aren't familiar with the Legislative Council meeting, that's when the superintendents that vote, that are the voting members of the UIL, meet, and they meet twice a year in Austin. And they have subcommittees like for music, academics, athletics, and those kind of things. Well, this pitch count thing, when I left the UIL meeting in April, we were all under the impression from our committee that this was going to be proposed to the athletic council this last Tuesday to become a recommendation for the 16-17 school year. And then if we needed to make a change somehow or another, that if the coaches didn't like it, we could make a change and then make it a rule by 17 and 18. Well, it didn't even get on the agenda on Tuesday. And my baseball coach, who's on the Baseball Coach Association committee, he called me and wanted to know what the hell. And I go, well, I wasn't there. I don't know. I hadn't got the update yet. So I called and talked to UIL on Thursday. And I like have UILs like on speed dial on my telephone because I talk to somebody down there very frequently. And they didn't put it on there, but it is gone. It is supposed to be on the agenda at the October Legislative Council meeting to be recommended as a guideline for next year. And then if it has to be tweaked and they don't like it, we can do that. And there's a thousand. The five and 6A schools are okay with it, but it's the 1, 2, and 3A schools that are doing all the bitching because they only have one pitcher. It's kind of like when you have a good softball team, you know, a lot of softball teams only have one pitcher, and that little girl throws three games in a row in a three-game series sometimes. I mean, I witnessed it when Carlton's people beat me in Friendship. That little girl's arm was about to fall off her shoulder. Am I right or wrong? Yes. But the pitch count thing, we're looking at it. And there's, like I said, there's lots of questions because, well, okay, if they get their 110 pitches, you pull them out of the game, can they go back in and play third base? Or can they bat? And the answer is yes, the way it's written right now. And so, but the small schools are griping, so I anticipate all this to change at some point in time in the next year. But it is a very hot topic in baseball coaching world right now in high school in Texas. And go ask your coaches what they think about it and let me know, because there's a lot of opinions, but the little schools are not happy with it. And then the other thing, question I get asked a lot is, are they going to do a pitch count for softball? That's a negative. That'll probably never happen because it's just a whole total different ball. I mean, it's a whole total mechanism of injury is totally different. Okay, anyway, thanks for coming. If you have any questions, I'm here, and I'm just – that's not me. I just had to throw that in. That's my son who just graduated from Midland High, and I just had to throw that up there.